"She will?" Peabody asked as they walked downstairs. "She's clean. She may stay clean, may not, but she's clean now, so her brain's clear enough to let her think twice. It all depends on where she ends up after she thinks twice." "I'm going to have nightmares for sure now with all those paintings. She's good enough to make them really, really disturbing." "Death's the ultimate experience." Hissing out of breath, Eve walked back into the bitter rain. "What makes some people so damn interested in death?"
"Well, we are."
Eve frowned as she walked. "You've got a point. Look up the clubs," she listed. "See if any of them are open, or if you can tag a manager, an owner." They hit two clubs, three more skanks, one club manager, and two bartenders. They didn't get a nibble until the second bartender. Brad Smithers tended bar at Screw U to finance his pursuit of his master's in political science. 23, buff and black, he earned extra pay taking deliveries, stocking the shelves, and doing setups 3 afternoons a week. "Plus, it's a quiet space until about 5 and the crew starts rolling in. We open at 5:30 for the happy hour crowd, but things don't start hopping until after 9, and don't really heat up until more like 11 most nights." "Hey, how about I fix you guys a fancy coffee? It's nasty out there."
"Black works," Eve said, but he winced.
"You want to trust me here. You don't want the Java straight, not what we've got. But it works fine as a base when I fancy it up."
"I wouldn't mind it," Peabody said. "It is nasty out there."
"I like to talk while I work anyway." He went behind the long, stylized U of the bar, began to program an auto chef. The lights, on full now, consisted of trios of screws with tips that appeared lethal should they fall and impale a customer. The walls carried a dull shine and numerous photos of naked or mostly naked people in creative poses of debauchery. Booths and tables crowded in together, some with privacy domes, some with filmy curtains. The dance floor spread, another dull sheen in front of a currently empty stage. Stairs corkscrewed up to the open second level where Eve could see some lounging sofas, sleep chairs, and doors to what would be the privacy rooms. "Place shows better at night," he commented, as he took some bottles from under the bar, began to doctor up the coffee. "For what it is. The lights start pumping, music starts grinding. We get some colorful characters, and they're part of the show." Eve laid the photo on the bar. "Is she one of the colorful?" He glanced at it while he sprinkled something onto the thin froth topping the coffee. "Going by the outfit, and that's about all you can go by, that's not the sort who patronizes this establishment." He smiled when he said it. "You might see her wander in during happy hour, look lost, and head out again." He set the coffee on coasters sporting a drawing of a screw and a large U. Eve rattled off names of the women on her list. "Those are the sort who patronize this establishment. Shauna was in last night, Yola earlier in the week. You never know when the flash is going to show. Pops in and out, or settles in and closes the place down."
"Are they in trouble?"
"Maybe." "How about a woman, more 30s or even 40s, white, red hair, blue side dreads, orange dragon tat," he finished.
"You've seen her.
Sits at the end of the bar." He wagged his finger toward the other end of the bar. "Drinks. Wait, I've got it." He shut his eyes, hummed a moment. "Virgin Moscow Mule. She makes one last. The women I named, does she interact with any of them?"
"I don't think she interacts much. Sits alone. I tried chatting her up once, like you do. She told me to fuck off. I fucked off. Now she sits at the other end of the bar, so I figure she's not here to chat. How often does she come in? Like I said, I've seen her a few times, and she might come in on my nights off. I wouldn't even call her a semi-regular, but often enough I remember the hair, the tat. Describe her otherwise. Hell, I'd know if she walked in, but... A white girl, like you said. Maybe on the thin side? A lot of skin showing, a lot of face paint. That's like a uniform in here. She blends. Yeah, except most come in to hang out, to get trashed, to dance, to hook up. She sits by herself, so that stands out. It's why I got her when you started asking. Would you work with a police artist? Sure. But I don't really have a picture in my head. You'd be surprised. Peabody, get Yancey on this. Got it. Can I just say, this is seriously mag coffee. Those touches of caramel and vanilla? He smiled, wide and pleased. Glad you like it. I did the barista thing as an undergrad. Tips here are way better. Brad, and it is good coffee. If you see her in here, contact me. If she's in here, and any of the women I named are in here, see if you can move them to a private space. A lot of times they're here at the same time. Especially if we've got a headliner playing, you'll see most, if not all, the regular rock chicks come in to hang. Move them if you can. If the redhead orders a pomtini, stall. Deep, dark eyes showed worry now and a few nerves. You think she's gonna hurt one of them? Which one? It'd be easier if I knew. She's dangerous. Don't confront her. Tag me and pull in whatever security you've got. Are they any good? I guess. They handle shit when shit comes down. Let them handle her. I'm gonna talk to your manager about passing the word on her, but you pass it to the other bartenders and waitstaff. Yancey can be here in about an hour, Peabody announced. We're going to be open by then. I'm supposed to... This is important, Eve told him. She's already killed two people. Holy fuck. He rubbed a hand over his hair. Holy fuck! I'll make it work. I'm going to clear it with your manager. What do you do if she comes in? Tag you, get security, try to move any of the rock chicks in here to... The kitchen's back there. The kitchen would be good, right? It would. And stall if she orders a pomtini. Tell the rest of the crew. Don't fucking panic. You've got it. Eve worked her way back to Central through the bitter insistence of the rain. She updated board, book, notes, pushed through some standard paperwork. Then sat, coffee in hand, boots on desk. Which one? She wondered. Which one of the women she'd spent a big chunk of her day talking to was the target? All of them fit the basic outline of the book's victim. How do you pick, Strongbow? Or does it even matter? Is this opportunity mixed in? Who's available when it's time to make your move? No, she thought, and got up to pace. That didn't fit the pathology. It would be more specific. She weeded it down, weeded all but one or two out. And one, maybe two, through the culling, the research, the opportunity, becomes Bliss Cather. One of them has to die. They'd caught a break with the bartender, but it was a damn sure bet she'd told other clubs, watching, observing the one or two she'd picked out. Eve went back to the board, studied the faces of the women Brad called rocker chicks. It wasn't looks, she thought. Not when they were all so much of a type. Behavior? They all lived on the edge, all actively pursued and embraced the same sort of lifestyle. Illegals, booze, indiscriminate sex, no healthy friendships or relationships, no actual jobs. Lives lived at night, reflected celebrity. So what? She stopped.
The ex. It's the ex. He's the determining factor. To kill, she has to love.
Who does she love?
She dived back to her desk, called up the names of the lovers, ex-lovers.
Which one?
Which one most closely matched the one in the book? On the first pass, she dropped two names down to low probability. One was firmly hooked with an actress and spending a lot of time in New L.A., the other on tour in Europe. You had to see what you loved, Eve thought. She studied the others, found them much the same, like their female counterparts. She needed the book again, she decided. Something might pop for her, just as it had for Strongbow. She grabbed her things, stopped by Peabody's desk on the way out.
I'm working from home. You can do the same.
You've got a copy of Dark Deeds?
Yeah.
Go through it. Make notes on the X, on the motive. What is it about him? Compare with the list we have now from the women we've talked to. Something had to click with Strongbow. Something about him. Let's find it.
Not the victim, the motive.
I'll start on it here. Take it home when McNabb gets off. I've got the audio function. You know, I'll program it for his scenes. Listen to it. Listening might make something jump.
Try it.
She fell in love with one of them. That's her reality now, especially now that she's living in that book. The others are over. It's time for Dark Deeds.
15. Little pellets of ice pinged on the windshield as Eve pushed through skittish, sliding, angry traffic. She spotted a couple of pedestrians with tiny icicles dripping from umbrellas and decided, as bad as it was, at least she was traveling in a heated car. Stopped at a light, she watched a pair of beat cops in pursuit of some guy, early 20s, mixed race, flapping brown overcoat, who loped like a gazelle down the sidewalk. Until he hit a slick spot, went airborne. His feet flew up, his ass crashed down. Before he could scramble up again, the beat boys had him.
Score one for Team Blue, she thought, as the light changed.
Once she drove through the gates, she could appreciate the fanfare of icicles, shimmering on the bare branches of trees, enclosing the shrubbery in glitter and gleam, all forming a fairy tale foreground for the stone, the towers, the turrets, the glass, all spreading and rising under that angry bruise of a sky. She appreciated more actually getting in the house without falling on her own ass. The cat rose from his perch at the base of the steps, stretched from head to tail, then padded over to wind and snake between her legs like a well-fed boa constrictor.
Did I beat him home again?
She tossed her coat, hat, and scarf over the newel post, crouched down to give Galahad a scratch and rub.
Straight to work mode, pal.
With the cat trailing her, she walked to the library first. She considered the appeal of sitting on the sofa, feet up, fire going, then accepted she'd work faster in her office. She took a stack of books, hauled them with her. After setting them on her command center, she updated her board. Then she expanded it, using the new section for ID shots of what she termed motive, dark deeds. As the ice pinged and sizzled against the windows, she ordered the fire on, programmed a pot of coffee. She settled in, read an early scene between the future victim and the motive, made notes. Public fight, club, crime scene. Victim trashed, motive half trashed. Ugly words, threats on both sides. public fight reported on gossip channels, on video. She searched the real rocker's gossip history, rubbed her eyes when she found every single one had a reflective incident. She moved to the murder scene, also early in the book. Same club, different night, but many of the same characters. Victim trashed again, and bad-mouthing motive, who sits in another section pretending to ignore her. Victim hits the dance floor. So does motive. Victim rubs suggestively against several available men and a couple women, all while watching motive. Victim and motive dance, simulating sex. Victim goes back to her table, pops a little erotica, brags that she'll have motive up in a privacy room, how she can lead him by the cock wherever she wants him. Lots of bodies, lots of noise, flashing lights, pounding music. Victim picks up the fresh, blood-hued martini, takes a couple of big gulps, continues to brag. Lots of laughing from her little group of sycophants. Trouble breathing. Drinks more. Gales of laughter as victim starts to lose consciousness. Screams and scrambling when she vomits. Motive tries to push through crowd to get to victim. Seizures. Skin turns cherry red. Chaos. Confusion. One figure back in the shadows observes, then slips out of the club and away. Will the killer, in real life, need to find a way to have the motive present? Eve went back to her list, checked residency, band schedule. She found four slated to be in New York over the next few weeks. And yet, she thought as she read a few follow-up scenes with the motive, having him there, making him a part of the death of the ex-lover, triggered emotions in him. Seeing her die shattered him, pushed him into grief and depression. Rather than giving the killer what she wanted, his attention and love, his salvation, it built a wall around him. Would Strongbow edit that mistake? Eve wondered. She rose to pace, to give her eyes a break, to work her way into thinking like a killer whose entire being sprang from the pages of a book. By having him in the club, the killer, in the book, failed to achieve her primary goal. The motive didn't come to her, love her, throw off what she saw as the chains the victim had around him, dragging him down into the abyss. In fact, rather than weaning him off illegals, he used them to block the grief and missed recording sessions and canceled a swath of tours. Until the cat ran out of the room, until she heard Rourke's voice answer the cat's greeting, she hadn't realized the low-level stress inside her. She'd wanted him home, off those icy roads, safe and with her. She didn't run out of the room like the cat, but she did walk out and wrap her arms around Rourke. It's bad out there. It's bloody vicious out there. He tipped her head back for a kiss, skimming his thumb over the dent in her chin. And now we're all in here. And in this world, at this moment, I want nothing more than my cup, my cat, to get out of this shagging suit and have a very large drink. A hard one? Not particularly, no. Well, but for the bleeding weather. A quick trip to Chicago, or what would have been quick but for the bleeding weather. You went to Chicago? Should have handled it by hollow, and that'll teach me. Getting there, simple enough. Getting back, not altogether pleasant. And, she thought, he'd have stayed over in Chicago if not for her. She considered her own skidding ride home in the ice storm and didn't want to imagine flying through it in a shuttle. I'll deal with dinner while you change. Will you? She heard the world of suspicion in his voice. It won't be pizza. But this is the last time it won't be pizza.
What will it be, then?
I'll figure it out.
Easing back, he rubbed his hands down her arms. A hard one?
I'll tell you about it over that big drink.
That sounds exactly right. I won't be long.
She turned back to her board, conceded she'd done little to narrow the field. Then again, the weather, bloody vicious, nailed it, lowered the chances of her potential victims braving it for a club tonight. It seemed to her the killer would conclude the same. They should all have a little more time, she decided, and went into the kitchen to consider dinner choices. By the time he came back in black pants and a blue sweater, she had the meal under warming domes and a bottle of wine opened.
Now this is our version of cozy on a cold and filthy night. I'm grateful for it, he added as he took the wine.
Why Chicago?
Hmm?
Ah, we've just finished up a major rehab to one of the hotels, and I'd scheduled the visit, some media and so forth, before this front moved in.
You could have stayed in the major rehab overnight.
He danced those clever fingers down her arm.
Then I wouldn't have my cop and my cat.
Unless you're starved. Why don't we just sit in front of that very nice fire for a bit?
I was worried, she confessed. I didn't know I was worried until I wasn't, but I was.
Well, I'm sorry for that.
I'm not late home, he added as they sat on the sofa.
The weather, I guess.
The day.
She shrugged it off.
And what was the day?
It was the day of the skanks and the strange interlude of the crafts.
Obviously, I want to hear about the skanks, at the very least.
What perv wouldn't?
So she told him, punched in what she'd learned at the craft store from the bartender, and ended with the morbid artist.
But it's not about them, the possible victims. Not as much about them as the rocker guy. The motive. The killer's obsessive love, and it's not really love, is what drives her.
Which is why you have all those new faces on the board.
The trouble is, they're not much different from one another.
Physical appearance, sure, but they're a type.
The image, the lifestyle.
In the book, she kills the obstacle while he's present. But that's just one of the ways she went wrong, so I don't think that's going to be a factor for Strongbow.
Unless
some part of her maintains enough reality to know the obsession ends for her after the murder. The murder is the goal.
Yeah. Trying to think like her gives me a damn headache.
Add the fact that she's certainly laid the groundwork for the book after this one, so she has to shift those realities. From this obsessed, skanky fan type to the saintly, obedient son, who's really a greedy bastard, who kills his wealthy mother and pins it on his screw-up of a sister. And how does she pull that off, anyway?
It's no wonder it gives you a headache.
Under it all, whoever she coats herself in, she's one woman. And that woman knows how to sew, watches her pennies, came from Delaware. Lives alone. Is likely in her 40s. If I get a sketch out of that bartender, it's going to turn this around. Whatever mask she puts on to haunt the clubs, she's going to show through.
You said the bartender described her as a loner and not very friendly.
But in the book, as I recall those scenes, people knew her by name.
Yeah, she was part of that scene in the book.
I figure either Strongbow couldn't pull that off, or she saw it as a mistake in the plot. The killer blends, but goes unnoticed. Except the bartender noticed and remembered her because she didn't really blend.
Or can't, Rourke suggested.
Think of the woman you described. She sews, watches her pennies, is likely 20 years older than many in the club. She lives through books. The writing and the reading.
She doesn't know how, Eve mused. It's not hard to figure out how to book a street-level LC. You can be nervous, look out of place. They don't care, and they get all kinds. Anybody can sit in the dark at a vid. But weaving yourself into a club scene, and these particular kinds of clubs... As she did, Rourke studied the board. It's more than being able to craft a reversible coat or doctor a drink. It's attitude. It's vernacular. A woman sitting alone at the bar at that kind of place? She's gonna get hit on by somebody who figured to get laid up in a privacy room. She can't do that. Not even living inside the character. Not just because she needs to observe, but she can't get that personal and stay unnoticed. The fuck-off tends to discourage most. Yeah, especially since there are plenty in there who'll give you a role with less effort. She's already altered the character there. Rising, Eve walked back to her board. Still, one of these has to be the object. The Vic is the obstacle. It's not going to matter if he's on scene at the killing, but he matters. Until he doesn't. Why don't we eat? Then I'll see if I can help you find him. Yeah, I've got Peabody on it, too. Rourke lifted the domes. This looks dead perfect. What is it? It said pork and beer stew. I figured if there's beer, it'd neutralize the vegetables. And she'd programmed a single bowl first, prepared to ditch it if it looked awful. It hadn't, and the smell had done the rest. I fed the cat while I was in there, she added, which explained why Galahad was currently sprawled in her sleep chair in a kibble with tuna chaser coma. She sampled some stew, decided the beer did help the healthy parts go down easy. You know, Nadine's hooked with that rock guy. Maybe he knows some of those guys. Possibly. Though I don't think Kincaid or the bands played the small club scene in more than a decade. Big venues, major tours. Hooked with? He asked. Going out a time or two doesn't necessarily lead to the hooked with, does it? I had her come in for a one-on-one today, and I poked her a little about him. She got flustered and... girl-like. Maybe I'm not supposed to say how she was and what she said about it. She didn't say, don't say how I was or what I said, but maybe it's supposed to be understood. Trying to walk that minefield gave Eve another headache. One of those stupid unwritten rules, she complained, which make them impossible to keep track of. Because he knew her, Rourke followed the convoluted logic. Before you tangle yourself up in the invisible, I have to say it's already too late. So, she fancies him then? I guess. If that means she's got some hots going for him in American. It does. We could have them to dinner sometime, and you could grill him like a trout. Maybe she'd enjoy that. Maybe she would. But she's all grown up and capable of making her own decisions on who she's banging and hooked with. Besides, Eve ate more stew. You ran him, didn't you know? Yeah, sure. So? He laughed, grabbed her hand to kiss it. I'd say having a man you may be or become serious about run by a cop when that cop is your friend is one of those unwritten rules. It ought to be actually written down somewhere, if you ask me. Either way. Well then, let's have it. Do we have to worry about our Nadine being hooked with a scoundrel? She pointed at him with her spoon. That's a fancy word, and it comes off like a compliment. Jake Kincaid was arrested about 15 years ago for assault, disturbing the peace, and destruction of property. All charges were dropped, as numerous witness statements and three videos, as some people in the bar where this occurred got right on that, clearly showed the drunk asshole he eventually ass-kicked, dogging him, then taking a couple of swings, which Kincaid avoided. It also showed Kincaid turning his back on said drunk asshole, walking away, just as it showed the asshole jumping him from behind and getting in a couple of rabbit punches before Kincaid shoved him off. At which time the asshole grabbed a chair, threw it at Kincaid, went back for more. Then, and only then, did Kincaid kick his ass, which thoroughly deserved it. He caught the admiration in her tone, understood it, agreed with it. So, he can handle himself. Sounds like. Other than that, no arrests. A lot of speeding tickets. A serious lot of speeding tickets, all over hell and back. He bought his mother a house. Is that so? When their first recording hit pretty big, he bought his mother a house. All five original band members are still with it, and two of them have been pals with him and each other since they were kids. One of them's done a couple of stints in rehab, had some bumps, but not Kincaid. He's never been married, but he did cohab with a woman, same woman, for about 6 years. That's been off for almost as long. He owns a converted warehouse downtown. I bet it's not bollocks coincidence that it's on Avenue A, and outfitted it into a recording studio. He lives there, too. She shrugged. Rourke smiled. You're all right with it, then. It's not for me to be all right with it or not. And if Nadine didn't check him out, I'll eat raw turnips for a week. I think you and turnips are safe there, as I agree with you. Back to the point, he might know something about these guys that didn't show on a run. The attitude, the personal choices that don't rise up to data. I could tap Nadine about tapping him on it, so it's not weird. Is she happy? I guess. Offer stride some, but she still landed the one-on-one where he aimed it. And I'm hoping that throws Strongbow off stride some. She's... Shit, I forgot! She took Quilla on! Quilla, the kid from Higher Power. She... Obviously surprised, he sat back a moment with his wine. Nadine's fostering a teenage girl? That's considerably more than off her stride. No, no, hired her, or whatever it's called, as an intern. She wanted to mentor somebody, so I recall that now. Remember her saying something about that. And you telling her you might have someone in mind. You had Quilla in mind. Struck me, that's all. Smart kid. Pushy, but smart. And so's Nadine. Smart and pushy. Anyway, she brought the kid with her to my office. Quilla said they had a tour of the new shelter. There's been enough progress for it, and we've the core of the staff hired. She was juiced about it. About it being ready in a couple months. But the memorial on the roof, that meant a lot. She snuck away from the group, no surprise there, but she did it to stay up there a while because it meant a lot. That's good to know. You may have changed her life by pointing her at Nadine. That's up to them. It is, yes, but you did the pointing. You gave them both the choice. Somerset changed my life. Then you turned it yet again. The badge changed yours. Yeah, then you turned it again. Pretty much upside down. We've righted ourselves, darling Eve. Won't it be interesting to see where these new connections, relationships, take Nadine? She started to speak, then turned around in her chair to look at the board. The skank list. They tend to know each other. Compete or hang. Go to the same clubs, shop in the same shops,
frequent the same restaurants or events. It's like that with the motive list. They're all in the same business, more the same subset of that business. There's going to be overlap on who's laying who. In the book, the victim and the motive had, or had had, a serious, if twisted and unhealthy, relationship. At the same time, she got up, walked to the board. The killer, our killer, isn't a part of that world like the character of the killer in the book. She's absorbed the role, but her experience is limited. Peabody called this group skanks because they basically are. They dress like it, act like it, fuck around like it. Peabody, free ager, cop, monogamous relationship, sews, crafts, bakes. She's a cop, and a good one, and she knows how the world works, knows what's in it, but still, she's outside this particular world. So when she looked at a group like this, she puts them together in one lump of skank. Interchangeable, you're saying. Yeah, she knows better, and she knows how to separate them into individuals. But Strongbow? They're all the same. You think it won't matter which? She'd kill any of them? I think I was off, figuring she focused on one here, two at the most. I think we find out which ones have had a thing, even just a quick bang-in-the-dark thing, with more than one of the motives. Crossover. It's still the motive who matters. But maybe any one of these who present the opportunity would do. How would you begin to find out how many of these wankers, because Christ, they all look at least a bit like wankers, each individual woman has shagged? I start by asking them. They'll brag about it. It's a badge of honor in skankdom. Visited skankdom, have you? With a badge and in the line. I'm going to contact them. Start working on a cross-reference. You could take a look at the wankers, dig down a bit. Give me your take on which ones have the most potential, musically, creatively. The guy in the book has some actual charm, talent, and that potential. Unless he's too busy smoking, swallowing, guzzling, or popping whatever illegals come to hand, and chasing them down with a whole bunch of alcohol, then he's a dick. So, to clarify, Rourke said, I'm rating the wankers on their level of potential as musicians and human beings, if and when they cease the smoking, swallowing, guzzling, popping, and chasing themselves into a dick. Yeah. Oh, and sex. Another addiction. On that, Rourke pushed up from the table. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. What an interesting way to spend our evening. Eve sat down and started at the top of her list by contacting Loxie Flash. About 10 minutes after Eve got a bang-brag list from Loxie and moved on to the next of the list, Loxie lit up a joint of Zoner, poured a glass from the bottle of top-shelf vodka she'd stolen at a party, and switched on the porn channel. She hated winter in New York and wondered why the hell she wasn't in St. Bart's. The fact that her finances were, at the moment, a little squeezed added to her foul mood. So fuck it. She'd head out to Naked Beaches in the morning. She could always hitch a ride on a private shuttle, talk Petra at the beach house into a suite in exchange for some publicity. Bored, irritated by the skinny cop, and since she'd reeled off all those sex partners, itchy, she reached for her link to start wrangling a ride in some digs in sunnier climes. It pinged in her hand with an incoming text. Hey, bitch, where you at? Got her jam going at Screw You. Place is banging and I scored some prime. Guess who just walked in with a couple hoes? G-Man, you guessed it. Come on, slut, time to party. Loxie took another pull of Zoner, drew deep as she considered.
If Janice was there, probably most of the usual crew was too, because Janice was too lame to party without the usual. Still, she thought of the cold, the ice, the effort of pulling herself away from Zoner, vodka, and porn, getting herself dressed and sexed, mega-style, since her ex turned up. A lot of work. The warning about staying out of clubs, about poison and all that bullshit played through her mind. But the idea of pumping Janice, the bitch had the rich, for that private ride trumped all. She left the porn running on screen, because now that itch felt real good. Now she'd pick some lucky bitch or bastard to scratch it. She answered the text. Be there in an hour. Save me a party favor. Yola Bloomfield tossed her link aside and brooded. She wasn't going to feel guilty for confessing. That's what you did to cops. She cheated on the stoner a few times. Not all of it was cheating anyway. Sometimes they'd been on a break, and once they'd gotten trashed at some after party and had had a free-for-all. Besides, the stoner had cheated right back. And she was clean now, and mostly sober. She studied the painting she'd just finished, decided it spoke to the inevitability of death and the suffering that preceded it, the dark choices that made the suffering and the inevitability worthwhile. She decided she really wanted a beer. Even if a lone beer in her empty apartment often made everything echo inside her head. She shuffled in to check the fridgey. Cursed. She'd meant to get some brew delivered, but she'd gotten caught up in her work, and now that she didn't have a single brew in the place, she wanted one even more. She could go out. Screw the weather. Get that brew, hear some noise, some music, do some sketching, and maybe inspire her next piece. Stay out of the clubs, the hard-eyed cop had ordered. Well, screw that, too. She did what she wanted when she wanted. When her link signaled, she walked back, checked the text. From that semi-idiot and overeager rich bitch Janice, she noted. Maybe it was a sign, urging her to hit screw you for a couple hours. She could get a brew and smother all the echoes. Eve sat back in her chair, pressed her fingers to her eyes. Cock and balls, she said. Rourke glanced over from his station at the auxiliary. Is that a request? As I'm nearly done here and happen to have those items handy. She lowered her hands. Who'd think a woman who wears cock and balls earrings would come off as the least skanky and most sensible on the list so far? I couldn't say. How large were they, these particular accessories? Big enough. And yet she says she's only had sex with three in our list, though she messed steamy, her words, with two others. Perhaps, though her jewelry choices belie, she's being modest and or discreet. No, she's too scared to lie about it. And is even now huddled up in her mother's place in New Jersey. Sexy bitch, on the other hand, claims to have had sex with all of them and some at the same time. She might be lying. Sexy bitch. Tattooed, Eve said, swiping her fingers over her chest. I suppose no one ever pointed out to her that if you have to announce you are, you simply aren't. But you do meet the most fascinating people in the course of your day, Lieutenant. I'm going to meet more tomorrow, because I'm going to have to track down and talk to all the male skanks. I'm not through my list yet, and there's not one of the rockers who hasn't been done by multiples on my list. It's not the sex. Well, now, Rourke began. No, it's the score. The act, sure, the literal bang, but it's the racking them up. And racking them up fills a void. I get sex just for the bang, and what's wrong with that? I can think of literally nothing as long as it's consensual. These women, cock and balls, the sexy bitch, they might hook with one of those for a short amount of time, sometimes a short and intense amount, but they'll still look for the bang with someone else. None of it's real. A few of them, Loxy, Yola, that level, it's more a roller coaster. They're hooked longer, tighter. There might actually be something there. Not necessarily a good something or a healthy something, but something. Still, they guzzle illegals and booze. Another void to fill. And, like the character of Bliss Cather in the book, live in desperate disregard for others. Fight with their chosen counterpart in public because that gets them off too. Playing for the crowd, reading about it later, seeing vids on the gossip channels. And Strongbow observes. Yeah, she observes, and most likely concludes the women are, because they come off that way, interchangeable. All of them offer the wrong things, destructive things, to the man she's selected as above, as better, as one worthy of her, of the character she's living in, of the writer she believes herself to be. Remove one, one she judges as influential, and he has the chance to reach that worthy potential. "And I'm circling," Eve admitted, "because none of this points me at her." "Circling, maybe, but you're thinking like her." "I'm thinking like I think she thinks," Eve amended, "but she's slippery, because she's crazy." "You've bagged the crazy before, Lieutenant. You'll bag her." Penguin coats and blue dreads. A personality so malleable it absorbs itself into fictional characters. "But I damn well will, bagger. Give me what you've got so far on the rockers." "It's a subjective and unscientific sort of ranking. I'll take what you've got. Top pick." At this stage, that would be Glaze, a.k.a. Adam Glazier. Lead guitar and vocals for the Glaze. Loxy flashes X. Swiveling toward the board, his photo, she frowned. "I'd have slotted him in loser territory." "You have to dig down a bit. Financially, he's very solvent." "So trash rockers make big bucks. What, many blow those big bucks on illegals, overpriced homes and vehicles? They live carelessly, engage poor management, and so on. Take Nadine's Jake as a yardstick. I don't know if he's Nadine's Jake. For simplicity's sake, he bought his mother a house. That qualifies him as a good and loving son, but also a man with enough brains not to buy her some flash jewelry, for instance. To think of her security, her future. Well, he certainly engages managers. He also remains involved and aware. Glazier hasn't bought his mother a house." "Okay. But he has purchased a condo in New York, his base in the city. And while he tosses money about, he also culls a sensible percentage out to invest with a reputable money manager. He hasn't, using Jake again, maintained friends and bandmates over long terms, as he's fronted two bands prior to this. But Glaze is being handled professionally. He's been dinged more than once for possession, and apparently developed a taste for Zeus in the last turbulent months of his relationship with this Loxy. While he has had court-ordered rehab, he entered, voluntarily, a facility in Zurich 4 months ago. And upon his return to New York, during the recording of a new album, with reportedly all of the songs written or co-written by him during his treatment, he's continued with addiction therapy and meetings. Okay. Good potential here. Is he in New York now? He is, recording. And in the Small World department, the Glaze is using East Side Sound. That's Jake Kincaid's studio. Okay. I'll talk to him in the morning. She grabbed her link when it chirped. Dallas. She's here. The harsh whisper hissed under a wall of noise. The blue dreads. Lieutenant, it's Brad Smithers. I just saw her.
Eve was already up and moving. Don't approach. Tap your own security. Have them block exits. I'm on my way.
To where? Rourke asked as he grabbed a coat.
A dive called Screw You downtown. She's there. Rourke snagged her hat and scarf as she was already striding out the door and calling for uniforms. 16. Before she walked into the club, Loxie popped a tab of Buzz. She had a few more tabs at home and a decent supply of erotica, but she'd dip on Janice for the party favors and save her own for that trip to the islands. Her mood bounced straight up. The buzz and the crowds, the screaming music, the flash and swirl of lights. People, so many people who knew her, wanted her, envied her. She made it a point to scan for Glaze, spotted him at one of the VIP booths. Not just the hose, she noted, but his bass player, his hard-eyed manager, and a third pair of tits she didn't recognize. The minute she saw him grin at the pair of tits, lean toward her so they could share a laugh, she decided he'd be the one to scratch her itch. She swirled off her coat. She'd gone bare-legged with a glittery, short, snug, crotch-skimming skirt and a top that opened in a V down to her navel. Thick chains draped into the V and hooked to the nipple clamps clearly outlined beneath the top. She'd damn near frozen on the trip to the club, but knew Glaze had a weakness for tits, and he'd given her the chains and clamps. He would remember what they'd done with them. She slithered through the crowd on chunky short boots with high curved heels. When he saw her, when their eyes met and held for just a couple beats, her nipples hardened against the clamps like shards of glass.
Hey there, G-Man.
Lox, how's it going?
Up, up, and away!
She had to shout it. The music's volume demanded it. She leaned over the table, leading with that deep V, pursed her red to the edge of black lips in an exaggerated kiss.
Haven't seen you around.
Haven't been around.
Yeah, another detox, right?
I need a drink. She picked up his glass, down some.
Jesus, WTF!
Mineral water, twist of lemon.
He took the glass back from her, set it aside.
How the mighty have fallen. You get up off that fine ass and want to live again, I'm over there.
She hip-swung her way to another booth, where Janice and some of the usual crowd piled together.
Hey, Lox, I wondered if you'd show up tonight.
I said I would, didn't I?
She screwed her ass between two others, slouched back, angled toward Glaze's booth, spread her legs. Her smug smile faded when she glanced toward his booth, saw he not only wasn't looking, he had his head together with the new tits. In retaliation, she laid her hand on the cock of the man beside her, gave it a teasing squeeze.
Who do I have to fuck to get a drink and a tab?
She grabbed a drink off the table at random, downed it, and didn't see the woman with the blue dreads come out of the shadows to sit at the end of the bar.
Loxie hit the obliging Janice for another tab of Buzz, pulled the obliging cock. Benny, she remembered, maybe Bernie, onto the dance floor,
pushed through the twisting, grinding bodies so she'd be in Glaze's line of sight. She turned her back to her partner, ground her ass into his crotch, arched and gleamed when his hands slid over her breasts, tugged lightly at the chains. When Glaze looked at her this time, she slithered up and down the body behind her, ran the tip of her tongue over her lips, and, lowering her hand in front of her crotch, curled her fingers in invitation.
His eyes didn't fire with lust as they always did. Instead, was that fucking pity, she thought? Enraged, she nearly leaped to his booth, vicious words ready to scream from her throat. She stoked the rage by spinning around, grinding crotch to crotch, grinding mouth to mouth, fully aware that more than one clubgoer had pulled out a link to record the moment. Everyone would see. Every fucking body would see. She was known, wanted, envied. She listened, blood cold, as Benny or Bernie or whoever the hell he was told her all the things he wanted to do to her. Later, I need that drink. She cast a look over her shoulder on the way back to the booth, but Glaze wasn't watching her. In fact, he signaled for the check. Leaving, she thought. Let him. Fuck him. She nudged the hands, groping and pawing all over her, away. I said later. Snatching up the martini glass filled with deep red, she drained it dry with a long series of swallows. She heard the shout-out to the Glaze as the band kicked into one of their hits. Perfect, she thought. Now she had to listen to that shit when... A woman moved, just for a moment, into her field of vision. Red hair, blue side dreads. All the layers of enhancements couldn't disguise the fact she'd already hit the 4-0 mark. Old bitch, smug smile, fucking crazy eyes. She started to shoot her the finger, started to demand another drink, another tab. And it all came flooding back. Poison, Pomtini, stay out of the clubs. No! She croaked it out, grabbed her dance partner, tried to scream. He took it for an invitation, began to dry hump her while the laughter rose, the music screamed. Her gasps for breath only made the man with his hand up her skirt moan. Then the music faded, the lights dimmed. When she went limp, Benny, it was Benny, tried to haul her up. Fuck, she passed out. He dumped her back on the booth. Unconscious, essentially already dead, she rolled onto the floor and began to seize. The woman who currently embodied Bliss Cather's killer smiled, satisfied, vindicated. She turned away, caught the stunned, horrified stare of the bartender. He looked straight at her. Into her, and had a link in his hand. When he shouted something, something drowned in the music, she snatched a coat off the back of the dead woman's booth and sprinted away. Not toward the front. The bartender continued to shout, to gesture now, and to her own shock, leaped over the bar to push through people, to push in her direction. She turned sharply, slammed into the kitchen, ran through and out the back, kept running, running, shot around a corner, dragged on the coat. A coat that turned out to be a hip-length fur, mink, with a hood. She ran another block, turned another corner. She dragged at the dreads, yanking them and some of her own hair off. She slowed her rush long enough to shove them in a recycler. And pulling the fur hood over bold red hair, shed the character. Strongbow walked through the icy night, stroking the fur. She thought, to the victor go the spoils. Eve walked into chaos and knew it was too late. Just as she knew whose body she'd find. Loxie Flash had been the only one on the list who hadn't answered her link as Rourke raced over the icy roads downtown. She badged the big bulk of the bouncer. Stay on the door, she told him, and shoved her way to the first uniform she spotted. I want this scene secured. We're trying, Lieutenant. We've got close to 350 in here, and a lot of them are drunk, a lot are stoned, a lot are both. I just called for more uniforms. Tap dispatch for Officer Carmichael out of Central and his partner. Got it.
We've got two men on the DB. Got people moved back from there. Looks like